All right, this is the GMBM podcast, and this week we have got Ben Deakin. Now, dude, right, don't take this the wrong way. I don't read magazines anymore, all right, and I've only got you in my phone as Deeks, right? So is it an E at the end or an I?
It's one of them, mate.
Where is it? Deakin?
Deakin. Deakin.
Because spell check don't like it.
No, it's a Deakin.
It's a Deakin.
So the easiest way to remember it is
just correct that.
The Deakinator.
Deakinator. Really? Really? Is that where we're going? All right.
No,
it's this
Let's
week.
Start again.
It's the GMBN. Welcome to the GMBN podcast with the... Really?
No.
The Deakinator.
No.
That's out there now.
Let's start again. It's too much.
No. The Deakinator.
I thought we were going dark already. It was like with an eye.
No,
I thought it was like a nice funny window.
You can't. But... Once these things are started, you can't turn them off. They have to play. So anyway, how are you, mate?
I'm all good, thank you, Mark.
We're fresh from chats actually, because we were at the cycle show in London at Alexandra Palace at the weekend.
We were.
So we've been talking about lots, including the Tyson Fury fight, which we should probably try and avoid in this podcast.
Yeah, not really.
Because we're all deep in it. Chopper's actually here in the background, but he's going to sleep. Your voice, your subtle tones are going to send him off.
Exactly.
Right, so let's... I tell you how I think we should start this chat, right? Because I want people to understand who you are. Right, tell us about getting shot in the face in Afghanistan.
Face? Foot?
In the foot? Oh, I just thought.
Yeah, you know. I just thought.
I looked at you and I thought. They said you'd been shot, and I just thought.
Well, you know, I
presumed. I presumed it was
facial
in the
surgery
foot.
Here and there.
That's not as dramatic.
Nice ankle. What a great start.
No,
this is.
Tell me, honestly, right, what does it feel like to get shot?
So, genuinely, you don't feel it because of the adrenaline.
Right.
But it was more the fact it went through a mate's legs and you sort of see all that first.
What?
And then...
What? Explain. It went through someone's legs first?
Yeah, so there's three of us on the...
Second-hand bullet.
Exactly. So that's why I took it and it didn't go all the way through me. So I was quite lucky for that. So there's three of us on a rooftop. All three of us got hit. Luckily for me, it went through a mate's legs first. And then when I jumped off the roof into cover, that's when I saw the underside of my foot. And then it was like, whoa, what's going on here? So that's what it was. It was just
Flip
the fact
me.
That went through a mate's legs. He slowed it down. I was mad enough to obviously just take it. And
dare I ask, how's your mate's legs?
He lost a leg.
Just one?
Yeah.
That's not bad getting shot in both knees and one,
good.
Is it?
Yeah,
us paralysed people call that a flesh wound.
Exactly.
We ain't that bothered about, wound. You know, losing. Sorry, that's terrible. But it's a disability joke. I'm allowed to make
them.
I'm not
exactly.
really allowed to make them.
No,
but
good.
I do make them now
good.
Again. But yeah, so... That's incredible. So a bullet, if a real bullet goes through lots of people, not one people.
Yeah.
Person. I didn't realise that. If you're on a roof, right, and you get shot, are you not very good at being...
No, you're crap, really.
Because aren't you supposed to be the people?
I basically thought, right, I've done my time here. Let's get shot, lads, and then we can go home and have good food again.
What's the food like?
Pretty awful, to be fair.
I did go on a marine weekend once, me and some other extreme sports people for the Extreme Channel. Do you remember that, the Extreme Channel?
Yeah,
just nod.
Yeah.
And and these Marines made us look like idiots. They took us like up a mountain and they made us live in a tent, like what you all guys do. And we just, we couldn't handle it. We were extreme on bicycles and skateboards and roller skates. Turns out we're not that extreme when it comes to actual life.
That's the problem, isn't it, mate? It's weird. I think the hardest thing with a lot of that is just the mental side.
Yeah.
And knowing Chop how I do, obviously as he's here, it's like you almost set your own job role being a mountain biker. But when you're being screamed and shouted at by, you know, imagine sponsors go, right, we need to do this, that and the other. It doesn't work like that. You just be like, do you know what? I'm over this. But in that role, you just have to endure it. And that's what's part of it.
So do like muck off not talk to you like that?
No, you just, it's sort of one of them. Occasionally, Alex gets on his high horse.
Does he? Yeah. If Alex shouted at me, I'd be quite scared because he's so jolly all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
He's so happy.
That's it,
if he shouted, I'd be really upset. This is Alex Trimmer, who owns Muck Off, by the way. That's who I'm talking about there. So your background, there you go. I wanted to ask that because I wanted everyone to know your background because it's such an interesting path. From there to mountain bike influencer.
What a weird
Talk me
weird
through
way.
It. How does it work? Like, let's go through it bit by bit. So you're a...
Should we just start? We start from the basics.
Start from the basics.
And I don't want to bore anyone. I don't want to put anyone off, and I don't want to go on a tangent.
They're listening now. They're not bored, are they?
Very quickly.
No, they're not.
You do your school thing. You look at you guys in the magazines. You're like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'd love to ride a bike professionally.
Mm.
Back then, obviously, there wasn't social media. It was all magazine-based, race results, et cetera, et cetera. You get your race results and almost good enough to get a bike from a sponsor, but certainly not pay a mortgage. Mm. And then that was the reality of leaving school going, God, what am I going to do? Didn't want a normal job. Joined the Marines. Out of 120 people that went in, only 11 of us passed. And then did my thing, went to a war zone, realised I wasn't that good at being a frontline soldier. And then, you know, 8 years, 9 years later, I then took a year out from that, went to Whistler, got arrested in my pants after making a bit of a viral video.
Coming back to that in a minute.
Okay, cool.
Don't tell us too much about that because I want to come back to that.
And then that's it, before you know it. So everyone who's like, oh, I want to be a pro, don't be fast, just go and, you know, play the game, and that's that. So,
but what, it's such a weird time, isn't it?
Big time.
It's a really, really strange time. And later on, we're going to be doing the podcast, and Chop's going to be, if he's still awake, I can't see because of the lights, Chop's going to be helping us with that. It's talking about this weird era we're in where, like, almost the most pro people are the people who aren't pro.
Yeah.
It's really odd.
It's really...
Like, I mean, it's really fantastic because it means you've got 12-year-olds with the following of God knows, you know, just it's just such a strange time.
Big time.
And you're kind of like another version of like how weird it is.
Yeah.
Because don't get me wrong, you weren't going to win any World Cups.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
But now you're like.
But I won the Swanage wheelbarrow race 3 times. The Swanage wheelbarrow race.
Is that in a wheelbarrow you're holding someone's legs? In a wheelbarrow
with your mate, you down a beer, you change, so you carry on, and I've won that 3 times. Anyway, moving on. Back
you
to
are
topic.
Such a beast.
Anyway, that's there we amazing. Go.
Were you carrying the guy?
Yeah, you changed. Chop's actually done it with me once.
I bet you didn't win that year.
No, definitely not. I bet he threw up everywhere, and that's the end of that. Oh, dear. Anyway.
Mate, can I do the Swanage race with you?
Yeah,
but
you'll
have to, obviously, yeah. I'm probably not going to push you around very much.
So I don't mind doing the pushing, but it means that you'd have to do the drinking. So
I'll do some of the drinking. So I'm not doing all the drinking. Happen. That we'll sounds like happen. A GMBM vlog if ever I heard one.
Times.
We'll maybe try that.
Yeah.
Or maybe try that. We'll have to have quite a good cushion in the old wheelbarrow.
It's fine. It'd be all
we
good.
We can find one.
Look how
but I mean,
like,
free to, that's some big wins.
Yeah,
it's still not enough to end up being like essentially like. I mean, I don't want to pry into money and stuff.
No, no.
But how does it work as a. Influencer, where's the money coming from?
So we've got to be blatantly honest with this. So if you think, right, mountain biking UK in its heyday, you're a company, you're paying for a page spread of an advert, and you're going, right, I'll tell you what, that's going to be however much it's going to be.
Mm.
Nowadays, unfortunately, I love print, always have done because that's our generation.
Mm.
Well, kids these days aren't going to watch magazines, so they're like, well, I'll tell you what, let's follow these YouTubers, because you look at YouTube, it is like the new TV.
Yeah.
From a company perspective, they're going, oh, this guy's getting views on his YouTube channel. Like, we obviously want to get our product in front of these people. What do we do? Well, let's sponsor these riders, and that's how we're going to get it. And it's sort of, you feel sorry, but at the same time, screw it. It's like, I've done my career, so I don't really care. Like, this is all just fun for me that somehow managed to go full circle. And you just sort of think it's all these top riders who are getting top 30 at a World Cup, hell of a result, but...
Mm.
You know, they're all there or thereabouts. If you're getting top 20 to 30, okay, amazing result, but who actually cares? The brand isn't really getting that much recognition.
Yeah. It's horribly true.
You know, if you're that idiot who goes down Mega Avalanche, has a massive crash and blows up the internet or whatever, it's going to get recognised. And then therefore, that's how
it's
going to
work. It's this shift, isn't it, of the power of... Because back in the day, when I was riding on Volvo Cannondale, my job was to get... the bike and the kit in the magazines. So it was about making relationships with the magazines globally, but especially nationally. So working with MBUK a lot, coming up with, you know, photographic content that was going to make them excited and ideas that were like, you know, they'd be getting something that no one else was going to get. And that was the kind of the gig. And it was like, you know, great, but there was only a few people who could get the space, you know, because it's a magazine, it's only got so many pages. Whereas, but you didn't really know, and nor did the brands, you didn't really know if it was working, you just sort of thought it was.
Yeah.
But you didn't know the numbers, you didn't really ever know the reach of the magazine, because the magazine would say one number, but they timesed it by a few numbers because they'd presume a magazine is left on a sideboard and read by two people plus the Freemates, and then they talk about it and it gets swapped at school and all these different things that basically meant they could say to advertise to their advertisers, we're getting a billion, you know, page impressions, if you like, in website terms.
Yeah.
But now you guys have got the numbers and they're real.
Yeah.
So the power is not only in the opposite place, it's factual. It's like they can't say, well, did you really get 30,000 views on that? You go, yeah, no, I didn't. I got 30,368.
Yeah.
And this many people liked it. No one disliked it. And and then 200 people liked it so much, they had to tell me in the comments below.
Exactly.
It. Which is incredibly powerful.
How insane is it? But how insane is it that, you know, from that perspective, as you said earlier, like from a company's perspective, they get to see exactly how many views you've had, how many interactions you've had, and straight away there's a price to that. They know that if they go and advertise in a shop window, how many views they're going to see? Well, they don't know, but obviously someone on social media or whatever, they know what they're getting for their money, and everyone's sort of, it's a fair way, if that makes sense.
It does. I wonder how they work out their budgets these days.
That's the problem, isn't it?
How do they do it? I mean, have you got any insight? I mean, have any of the sponsors you're working for, have you, like, worked out, long actually, like, do you get a vibe of, like, right, influencer, what do we call you?
I don't know.
Influencers. You influencers, are they a... Have we heard a term in our business that... I'm looking at Jack over in the corner behind the camera. He's saying, I'm not saying nothing.
It's
interesting. I wonder if I was a marketing manager now, whatever company that would be, it would be a disaster. But if I was the marketing manager of that company, we'd all go out for lunch and have drinks.
Company expenses.
But after that, I would then be like thinking, how the hell do I work out where I spend my money?
Yeah.
Because it's you guys who have all the proof. It's a very strange time.
It's weird
times. It's a very strange time. So as an influencer, what's your goals? Like now you've ended up a professional mountain biker, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
What do you work out? How do you work out what you do next?
Well, I think the biggest thing with all of this, it was one of those that I've fallen into rather than I haven't chased anything. So the biggest thing I always look at with influencing, when you look at the likes of, like, and we all love him, like Sam Pilgrim, like he would go out and make a video because he's like, I need to make a video. The difference is with me, maybe over Sam, obviously Sam gets millions of views. If I'm going to an event, I'll film it because I'm going there anyway. If I was going to go out and make a video, then it changes the whole dynamic of why I ride. So from that perspective, it's like I'll only film what I'm going to ride anyway with your mates. And hopefully from a viewer's perspective, they're taking along that journey with you. And they're like, right, well, I can sort of see it's all genuine. It's not fake.
I mean, I think you and Sam are very different, obviously we've had Sam on the podcast recently and it was really interesting to see how, like, it's hard work.
Yeah.
It's bloody hard work. I mean, he really works hard and he's really thinking about it a lot. Sam, a photograph of Sam smiling would make you think he's not a bright guy.
No, definitely.
But that's not actually who you meet.
He's insane.
He's very smart. Yeah. He knows exactly what he's doing. He always has. And I think he likes playing the...
Oh, of course he does.
Do you think I'm dumb? He's not. So exactly. Couldn't be less dumb.
So good.
And he's... But he does have to work very, very hard. But I think equally for your stuff, that is the beauty of it, is you know that it's... You're after the ride with your mates, the fun. That's your kind of brand.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to maintain that because you've only got one mate. No,
that's it. He's over there in the corner, and he's
I mean, how many times can you ride with that guy?
Exactly. Not enough. It's sort of one of them, isn't it? Anyway, but yeah, it's all awkward and weird now. But yeah, it's still. I think the hardest thing, or going back to the whole social media thing, if you look at, you know, Brandon Semenuk, hell of a rider. You look how much Red Bull spend on one of his projects.
Yeah.
Like, and this is where it's sort of relatable. You know, we're talking a lot of money, yet Sam Pilgrim ride a bed bike down a set of stairs and he's getting, like, massive views in Millet. And you sort of think, well, Red Bull could turn around and go, well, why are we spending all this money on this amazing project when we're, the whole purpose of all of this is exposure for the athlete, exposure for the brand. Well, why don't we just, obviously different brands, but you look at Pilg and you think, well, he's just getting all this exposure riding a bed bike down a set of stairs. Yeah. It's like,
it's genius. Mad. It's mad. But where'd you get a bed bike from to start with? Like, it's hard work, isn't it? You've got to actually plan this stuff. And knowing from making videos here at GMBN, you have to, you know, sit down and think hard, long and hard about what you're going to make a video about, why, and then how, and where. And it's not easy. It's interesting you mentioned Brandon Semenuk, because I'm sure when we did our podcast, Jock, I'm sure he came up in that. And I'm pretty sure when I was talking to Sam, he came up. And then I was pretty sure when he came, what is it about that guy? Because I was going to ask you about who's your favourite rider later on. But maybe now you've mentioned him now, or you've mentioned Semenuk now. I don't know if that is your favourite rider, but why is that guy so special?
Well, he sets bars, doesn't he? I think the way he is, so he's sort of, you know, when I was growing up, obviously you guys, Steve Pete was a massive inspiration because it's a totally different ball game. But in today's standards, it's because all the edits, the videography, it's not just about race results anymore, is it? And you sort of think about what he does, and certainly not necessarily what he does, but what will the cameramen do, and the finished article, you think, wow, that's something.
I've got to get him on our podcast. I don't know how I'd do that. I don't know how I'd...
Write in the comments.
Yeah, Brandon. Do you think he's listening?
If he's tagged enough, mate.
Are you behind this funny mic cover? I think you might be. I have actually chatted to him once in a coffee place in Whistler. Not Whistler, the bit next to it. Blackcomb? Blackcomb. I was chatting to him there. He's the loveliest kid.
Yeah.
Really nice. Friendly guy. You always expect these people to be like super mean and
go away.
He was like, hello mate.
It's
a really cool guy. Have you got another favorite rider? Is there someone else who really inspires your riding now?
I think anyway, to be fair, we went to, which we might come on to, we went to the Vanta Jam yesterday, and just to see the young kids throw it down, when I say young kids, they're probably quite old now, but like Chaos Seagrave and his whips, like, it's just, he looks like he's having fun on his bike all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's taken a massive change from just racing now, where we all know, we all watch the TV shows and we watch, obviously, the race results. We think, wow, those guys are hauling. But as we said earlier, if you're looking at the top five, the top 10, the top 20, like, they're all so fast, there's not an out-and-out sort of one over the other, you know?
Yeah,
they're
all
hauling. They're all machines that are going super fast. Yeah, if you look at, you know, later on down the pack and you sort of see people that are just having fun, you're just stoked that they're stoked rather than everyone else isn't having fun. They're seriously stressed until it's all over. It's almost like when you look at Greg Minnaar, like, what a ledge. You know, he's been there, done it, and he's still going strong at 39, 40, and he's just won the world champs. You think, what a lad.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, I mean, I was listening to, he was at the cycle show that we were at, and I was listening to his talk, and it was really interesting to hear him sort of how he breaks down a sort of course and an event, and how he's sort of battling with, well, how are these, he calls them the Frenchies, you know, how are they, that group of riders doing it? How have they upped the pace? And he was saying about how there's just this intensity to their riding that they're never off the throttle.
Yeah.
There's no point in the track where they rest. There's no, he was sort of describing these moments where you would sit down and coast in the old days and wait for the next big moment. It's like, well, there's no non-big moment. It's all big moments all the way down. You've got to let it go. And like, just to be that quick now is very, very difficult.
Definitely.
But how does he keep making that shift? You know, because he's been through the era of everybody.
And definitely that age as well. And it is definitely a young man's game, quite clearly.
Yeah.
But it's the whole injury thing, isn't it, as well? Yeah. When you look at a number of injuries that people have, you think, wow, how is he doing it? But with that, I guess, is the experience that he knows that he's not going to ride that track 100 miles an hour the first two runs because he knows how it's going to change or whatever.
Yeah, now, he pieces a weekend together very well, and he pieces a season together even better, because he obviously understands from his chat, he was saying how he could start a season and he's like, all right, this is one of those, it ain't going to happen yet. I'm just going to have to wait. Maybe the World Cup's not what I'm winning this year. This is World Champs year. And then all of a sudden he starts a year really good and he's like, oh, hang on a second, I'm on it here. Yeah. And it's amazing how he could piece that together. It's really cool. But you're saying about, he's an old rider, and you're saying about the young guys.
Yeah.
But at the Vantajam yesterday, so just for you guys listening, the Vantajam was a really cool, I didn't get to go, but Neil has been telling me, who did go this morning, how cool it was. It was basically like a jam on a brand new track at Bike Park Wales, the Vanta, is it called Vanta Black? Just Vanta.
What's it called, Chuck?
Yeah, really. Vanta.
We went there yesterday, no idea. There might be another brand in there, which I'm not sure if we're allowed to mention this.
You can mention any brands.
I think Red Bull put some money behind
that track, yeah.
And they've pumped it for Laurie Greenland's like initial edit, and right. Then obviously now it's, I wouldn't say it's open up to the public, because it's quite a gnarly track.
It's big.
I think they beg and they sort of pick and choose when they open it, but it is essentially a new track in a public park, which when it's open, you can go and ride it.
And it's big jumps.
Big jumps.
But you were saying about young riders. In that young riders, Chaos, he's old, because there was
Harry Schofield,
he's 11, 12. And then there's another dude. Neil said Billy Pugh was maybe one of the best riders there, and he's 14 or 15.
So him and his dad, like... What? The level has just gone, isn't it?
It's scary, isn't it?
Mental.
I mean, to be riding those tracks at that age is... as a parent, I'm like, what?
If you met Billy's dad.
You've got to be a brave parent to let your kids go down there like at that rate. It's frightening.
Definitely.
Well, I guess they're not good. I guess they're just the fact they're riding it.
Yeah.
But they're making it look so good.
They're making it look so cool and effortless.
Who was your favourite rider there?
I think the under sort of slung heroes, like Joel Anderson, is Joel for a number of years, and he's someone who probably doesn't get the recognition that he deserves and certainly needs, to be fair, because he's just like, you see him without a helmet, he's just like normal guy, his helmet on, you're like, wow, this Dark Assassin's shredded it. You know?
Yeah, why weren't you guys riding it?
We were.
Oh, you did ride it? Oh, I thought you were hitting it.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Maybe not. Oh, sorry, I thought you were like watching. I was thinking,
we're hitting it, man.
I sort of thought that because Neil didn't... Oh, I don't want to call you out, Neil, but Neil didn't ride. I thought maybe you were being like super pros on the side getting the footage.
No, mate, we were there.
Sorry, I feel bad.
Say hitting it, we were surviving it.
So what is it like? What is it like to ride?
Big.
It's like, is it?
You're going into stuff and you're just relying on hopefully the bike doing all its thing and you doing all your thing. And
any big cases?
There is. Oh, Tane. Poor old Tane.
She had a nasty crash, actually.
Yeah, hospital job.
Oh, really?
So it was like, it's pretty serious. So.
Ooh.
It's one of those where.
And do we know if she's all right?
She is all good. We saw her yesterday evening. A bit sore, all of that good stuff. But when you actually see the ground, that is not forgiving at all. It's not like a nice sort of fluffy bit of roof. You can just like, oh, thank you very much. We're talking like horrible rocks, jagged edges. Mm. And so, yeah, there was one guy. What's the guy, the dirt jumper? I know, this is probably done now. Zach Rainbow.
Zach Rainbow. Someone's name.
It's like porn star name, I think. He operates under that.
Yeah. There's a surname Rainbow.
He's from Isle of Wight, so I don't know if that
that's not his real name. Zach Rainbow. Yeah, anyway, he was there. Go on.
So he ends up flipping this jump that's mad, and then just big case, big crash.
Nice.
But I think man of the match, there's a few man of the matches, but we've talked about him earlier, and we've got to mention it again. Pilg decides to put his steering wheel on his bloody bike, and he goes and sends the big jumps on his steering wheel bike. That is just the weird guy.
Did he get through?
He sort of started halfway and just did the big jumps, and then did he flip with it as well? No.
Yeah.
Like, what a guy. Like, there is 90% of people watching going, we're never going to hit these in our life, and there's this toothless wonder with a steering wheel bike flipping them. But, yeah, there we go. But what a crew. I mean, you sort of forget there were so many cool riders that, you know, you're pleased to say they are your mates, but you forget actually they are top 10 riders in the world. Yeah. Like, Brendan was there, Sam Reynolds. Yeah.
I mean, so the quality of some of those guys, unreal. I've got to ask, Chops, a long way from the mic, but you're a jump meister. What did you think?
Brilliant.
And what was your big trick? Did you pull any oldies out? Nice. Big stuff. Nice.
Some good stuff, yeah.
I wish I'd seen that, because it's not bad.
No.
He's still not bad.
He's moaning about stiff legs and back this morning, but...
I guess that's the difference, dude, isn't it? That's the difference. He can still do them, but the next day he wished he hadn't. He's like, you know what? I remember why I stopped doing those, because it's not nice to you, is it? It's not. It's not. When we were chatting at Cycle Show, you were explaining to me, so your brand, Oi Oi.
Oi Oi.
You had your own stand there and
we
everything.
We did indeed, yeah.
Yeah, how did it go?
Really good, actually, because bearing in mind, this whole thing started as a bit of a joke.
Yeah, like, so that's why I want to go. Tell me about where Oi Oi came from, because this is ridiculous.
It's literally the local bus shelter. There was always chavs, and it was like Oi Oi, and it just became a thing. Like,
so you're in the bus shelter,
looking from afar. They're all there, and they're, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, because I know there's a few people that are into it, but all the tracky
bottoms.
Yeah,
you're talking to Sam again now.
The Reebok classics, all of that good stuff. They were like, oi, 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 and then it just materialised, and then I think, you know, and then I think the big one was we went to Lord's World Cup, me and Sam Reynolds, and it just made a video that blew up because we all got absolutely ruined for 3 days solid. And we somehow scrapped together a video on it, and then before you know it, it's now on... Obviously, DMR, Oi Oi, Saddles, and just all this stuff that's just found itself there. And I was just like, well, you know, we've all ridden for brands over the years. I just want to keep it fun rather than all this political stuff. Like, let's just put it on a shirt and see what happens. So
the brand Oi Oi is going well.
Yeah.
The participation side of it's amazing, because we can all play the game, especially when we see you.
Definitely.
It's like it's what everybody probably says to you straight away.
You do, yeah.
I didn't get to say it today, but I heard Jack say it when he let you in the office a minute ago. But let's talk about what it's like as Ben, the husband.
It's like, it is funny, but at the same time, when you're a 36-year-old man walking through Asda, I can assure you, Oi Oi, you're like, what in the hell is happening?
Your wife, girlfriend wife.
Yeah, long-term fiancé.
Fiancé, her face must be thunder.
Oh, she hates it.
I can just imagine. I was saying to my wife, Lisa, about this when I went back from the show. I was explaining it, and she was like I would leave you.
It's like, she's how like, is this bloke blagged it with she Oi was Oi.
Like,
yeah.
She'd be like, if we went to a restaurant and someone shouted Oi Oi at us, she would get up and leave, and that is the last time I'd see her. That's it's what she told them, me. She's like, it's that would not be easy to deal
that
with.
Would not
so how are you managing that? Or can you not? You can't.
You
not
just
in control.
Can't. You can't. You
You've lost
got no control.
Control.
I've lost control
oh
of it already.
God.
So. I guess, you know, the only way I put it by is if people shout, it's like, if you've got a shirt, okay, we'll let it go.
Let it go. But if they shout, you're like, if you bought the T-shirt...
You bought a T-shirt, right.
That's
get,
the new
get
rule.
There now. Yeah,
right, we've got to save Deke's life here, right? Okay, unless you've bought an Oi Oi T-shirt, don't shout it, because you're not...
You're not part of the crew,
no,
you know?
No, it's not acceptable. That is the new etiquette of Oi Oi.
Exactly.
You must purchase, then you can shout. If you have not shouted... No, purchase... You cannot shout.
Yeah, there we go.
Because else you're going to end up a single man.
Exactly, that's it. This is saving my like relationship, you know. You need to buy those
I'm
t-shirts.
Sure I'm overstating it, but I think anyway. I think it's quite a funny way to think about your brand, is it's not all roses, is it? Oi Oi.
Oi Oi.
How many times down a trail do you hear it?
Honestly,
like, if you go down like Forest of Dean, do you hear it more than
it's ridiculous. Like, it sounds funny. No, I honestly don't mind it.
On a trail it's great.
But it's hilarious. But it's when you're in a calf and you're in the queue and it's all quite awkward because you're like, yeah, can I have a burger and oi oi, and like, yeah, just a burger. And you just think, this, what have we started?
And do
here?
They want the Oi Oi back?
Well, God, yeah, they do. You know, when you like, if you give it once, you've got to give it to everyone. So it's like, I'll just keep quiet and just try and blend in as
so
much as I
can. So have you been anywhere where they've Oi Oi'd you and you're not Oi Oi'ing back? And they keep Oi Oi'ing, going,
Germany,
oh, you can't hear me.
Germany is insane. So there's an event called Dirt Masters, and it's so ridiculous. Like, so they have this whip off sort of. what is it, like two jumps, and it always goes out of hand. There's probably, I don't know, 20,000 people in this small area. It always goes mental. And there's oil, like, it just goes, like, really, I can't even explain it. Like, I'm sure you watch some of the videos. Like, it's just nuts. I've never seen anything like it. And the Germans can't really pronounce the oi, so they end up oi, oi, like, oi, all oi. The time. It's just, anyway, so yeah, there we go.
It's brilliant.
I feel sorry for your listeners.
Well, I'm glad you've turned it into a solid brand. That's good. And I'm going to get a T-shirt.
Ah, but then I've actually got you one.
Oh, shut up.
I genuinely have got you one. Sorry, we've got...
How jealous is Jack right now?
Right. See?
No way.
I don't want to...
Ben Deeks has just gone over to his bag.
There's a lot of stuff in here. So, I thought, Mark, here we go.
Oh, my gosh, I'm scared.
Look at that.
And
there we go. So
let me see the back. Oh my goodness!
So you got like a gnarly hand, mate.
Oh, that is fantastic. Thank you very
much. That's quite all right.
Oi, oi!
So you're part of the crew now, eh? You're all good.
Legit. Thank you very much.
That's quite all right, mate. Not a problem at all.
I'm actually very, very chuffed with that.
There we go.
Lovely stuff. We've had a good week. We've had a good week for merch because we were in Bentonville recently.
Nice.
Austrails hat I've got on. What else did we get when we were out there, Jack? You have to shout because people won't hear you.
Got a lot of stuff from Sea Otter.
That's you shouting, is it?
Yeah.
Well done. That's a shout.
You got a brand new bike.
I got a brand new bike. The batteries didn't turn up.
Oh,
that's
no.
Another story. Let's talk about disasters. Let's talk about you getting arrested in Whistler because apparently there's a whole background here. And I can't imagine arresting you just for the audience, right? Deeks is quite the beast, right?
No, not anymore. We've certainly lost all the super strength.
Yeah, I know, but you've still got all the skills. Go with the beef.
So
so to take him on as a police officer, I'm guessing, wasn't a great idea.
It was one
so
of
how
those.
This is going to go?
Well, I guess as we brought it up, we could, like, that's
come
it.
Come on, let's hear the story.
Obviously, you've got to think, right? I've been in a full-time career for 9 years.
Yes.
I've left. I was like, right, having a gap year, like all these students do, I'm doing exactly the same.
You got a bad foot.
Yeah, got a bad foot, we're in Canada, let's go and have a laugh. And it ends up with, you know, going out with Jono Jones, a real good friend of mine, and we met up with Pilg and all these amazing riders. Obviously, great day on the hill, you're shredding the gnar, you're doing all these big jumps. And you end up in the local boozer, you have a few beers, and then one thing leads to another, and then... Obviously, the inner marine came out, just like getting a bit crazy. And I just decided to just call Naked Bar, but no one else got it. So there I was.
What's that? Let me
literally
what's
just
Naked Bar.
Well, as it says,
oh,
on
is
the
that
tin.
The marine thing? Because everyone has to take their clothes
and
off.
And then normally, it sounds so bad because normally the last person who does it has to get around it for everyone. So
naked.
It's quite an expensive
what?
Brand.
So hang on a minute. So as a marine, like, come back to that story. So if you're in a bar with all your marine mates and someone shouts naked bar, you have to then take off your clothes and then get around.
Yeah.
Well, so you stay in the bar.
If you're like the last man to get naked, you have to just go and get the round.
But surely, I thought you'd have to leave the bar at least.
Well, normally, but... It just doesn't always work like that.
No.
But
so
anyway,
you do it. You do it. You do it in Whistler, and no one knows the game.
No, quite clearly. Yeah. Anyway, so we left the bar.
Well, surely you were supposed to get around.
Yeah, that was it.
Your first
no, no one else played. No one else played the game. So they were just like, what else is going on? So we end up going outside and just being properly just off my head by this point. I was just pretty much just marching around Whistler streets, not wearing much. And then before you know it, I generally thought it was some of my mates who've almost tried to go for a rugby tackle. I'm not saying I'm superhuman, but I had enough in me to just hold my own. So there was two policemen. And I just thought, well, if this was the UK, just like, you're drunk, go home, mate, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
But no, they wanted to make a mockery of the situation. So what didn't help was there was all this crowd suddenly watching this drunken buffoon in his underwear. So I was pretty, just like, what on earth is going on? So then all of a sudden these two cops have got me. I'm almost, I guess, I'm saying it now, resisting arrest as far as I'm just like, look, guys, let me get changed and I'll be on my way. It's fine. It's the end of that. But no, because they wanted to make it a thing. you've then got all this crowd going, he's a good guy, he's a good guy. And then all of a sudden they have to do something because it's like, I'm holding my own. Then there is another two coppers. I'm still holding my own. I don't know how. And then the bouncer got involved. And so in the end, in the video, there's six guys on
video?
Me. Yeah, there's a video of it. And then there's six guys on me. And I'm just like, what? Like, come on, let me just get changed and I'll be on my way. Like, this is all going a bit OTT with it all. And then the pepper spray came out and that was it. I was just like, just put me in the van. I'll just deal with whatever's happening. Anyway, the next day, I don't know if your listeners want to listen to this, but anyway, it's what it is.
Oh, they're listening.
I end up in the back of the van. We go to the police cell. Right, you're sleeping it off. We'll speak to you in the morning.
Yeah.
Next morning, you know, I just thought, right, tap on the wrist, like, we'll send you on your way. But no, we're keeping hold of your passport. You're going to court to plead, like, this is serious, this stuff.
Oh, and my God.
It all came around because of the Vancouver riots. So Vancouver riots happened, I think, two years before. And because of that, and because of all the crowd chatting, I'm a good guy, that's why I ended up having to, I'm a good guy, butt naked, resisted arrest, I don't know. But
oh, my God.
Anyway, so they're like, you're going to court for this. So I had to spend every day for the next 5 days going to Vancouver courts on this bus journey that I'd got to know all too well. And in the end, the judge was actually really on my side. She was like, look, like, fair play is what it is. You weren't doing anything too mad. But, you know, what can we sort of do to do this? And then she said, I've got a really good idea. I want you to make an apology video to say how sorry you were. So the following day, I'm on the top of the world at Whistler with a GoPro, just making this video how sorry I was. And then that was it. After that, they were just like, right, happy days. If we could just send that to the court, you won't have any fines, anything like this. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. Go to the police station, go and get your passport. So I go to the police station and they said, right, sir, come in this room. And no word of a lie, I swear down, they lock the door and they're just there trying to interrogate me. And obviously we've done all that training in the Marines, so I knew exactly their game. You're this, you're that, and just trying to poke a reaction. Yes sir, no sir. And then after all of that, I got my passport, and then that was it. And
no way.
They gave me the option at the time. They sort of said, look, we can either do it through the court, you can either do this, say how innocent you were, or say how sorry you are, and that's the end of that. You can literally leave the country, never to worry about this again until you ever step foot into the country, which honestly did cross my mind because at the time I was like, I'm over Canada, I'm never coming to this crap ever again. And then all I thought was you imagine in 30 years' time or whatever, you've got kids and family, you turn up at the airport like, why's daddy gone off with the police?
Oh my God.
All because of these things. So I was like, I've got to face up to reactions now and then it's done.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was it. Managed to get my passport and...
God.
So
I've never heard a judge come up with an art to like get on board
it's
with social
most,
media
it's
like
the
that.
It's the most bizarre thing, and it wasn't.
That's
a,
hilarious.
And what really screwed me over was the fact of my former job, because I thought, oh, if they know I'm a former like military
Forces,
guy, like Royal Marine, then they might just like, if I was in America, they'd probably go, you're an idiot, go home. But because of that, they turned it all against me, going, this guy's trained in hand-to-hand combat and all this.
Oh,
and it's
my
just
God.
Like, it's a drunk idiot in his pants. Like, let him go. And then that was it.
During the fight, did you have anything on?
Basically, I was boxers to ankles, and while they've got me, I've gone down to fill them up. So all the videos, luckily, like, I'm there with my boxers. But anyway, I better not say too much.
You've said a lot. I maybe shouldn't have asked.
It's all good.
Jack told me to ask. I wasn't going to ask you. I wrote at the end here because I just thought I shouldn't have asked.
Let's be honest, it was that video that... probably spoiled everything to where it is now. It's genuinely okay.
Isn't that weird?
Plus, any young aspiring kid, how do I get sponsored? Well, go to Canada, mate. Get naked.
No. This is not the podcast where we're going to say
It's mad.
Go to Whistler, yes.
Have fun.
Do a sick riding video.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then add a twist.
That's hard to do at Whistler now, though, because it's all been...
So many people do
it. Oh, my God,
well.
There's so many good riders.
You know, I was really fortunate enough with my group of friends at the time that ended up doing, like, I think, what year was that? 2012 or 13. So it was. I think it was a couple of years after Danny won a famous World Cup, World Champs in Chompery. So it was like following Danny, doing runs with Brendan, and as I said, with all these videos, it was like, this is my holiday that I just wanted to document. It wasn't for any other gain. It was like, this is my holiday. Like, what a sick gap year, you know?
Yeah, and then
that's how it all just...
And you're still on a gap year.
Still on a gap year all these years later. A bit less hair.
How long do you think the, you know, guys like you and other... Because, I mean, you've got, like, these young kids who are at the Vanta Jam, like 11. I mean, they're on it now. Yeah. That's what they're doing. Definitely. They could just do that forever. But I've really thought recently that the customer base, you know, our demographic for mountain biking now is so much bigger because of e-bikes balance 100%. Bikes. Because mountain biking used to be something you do when you got to the right height for 26-inch wheels to make sense.
Yeah.
You couldn't mountain bike really before that. But now you sort of, there's mountain bike-esque balance bikes. So you can start being a mountain biker at 2, and you can start being a mountain biker at 82.
Yeah. 100%.
Because so our audience base is, to some, you're old. To others, you're a young chap.
That's it.
Like, how long does this go on for? Like, have you got a plan of, like, I think I'll just ride this out?
The plan is to have no plan, but at the same time with that, like, luckily for me, I'm teammates of Ollie Wilkins.
And yeah.
We get to do some amazing trips through our bike. Yeah, I don't want to be too pluggy, but Focus bikes are obviously really good for me and Ollie, where they've looked at the market and their demographic and they think, why do they want 18-year-olds doing double backflips when they can have two sort of middle-aged-ish sort of guys chewing the fat, showing how cool a bike is, but most importantly, having a good time. And I guarantee that will sell more bikes than someone winning a World Cup or, you know...
Yeah, I think there's a good argument there. I mean, it's really hard to compete with that, just the sheer number, the sheer weight of content that you guys can put out and the number that those things get. Like, say you're lucky when you've got a teammate like Ollie, who's a very funny chap. I was going to do a podcast with him recently. I really lucked out because I wasn't well at the time. So Blake was here and he did the Dirt Shed Show with Blake, which was good.
Yeah.
But I wanted to do it because I wanted to have a chat with Ollie. It would have been really good fun. What time are we on, Jack? Because I was just going to...
42 minutes.
Oh, I wanted to talk about the Fury fight a little bit. I did want to a little bit, yeah. Can we talk about...
Because
you went.
I did go.
So Tyson Fury, just because this might be not being watched at the moment, Tyson Fury fight with Dillian White was this weekend. That's when this podcast is happening. And you were there.
I was there.
Was the atmosphere nuts?
Atmosphere was insane. Oh. Like, generally, like, never really gone to a proper boxing match. Like, a couple of local things, but nothing like this. And when they say 94,000 people or whatever, you sort of realise the sheer scale of that when you're lined up going, wow, this is something special, you know? And where I was sat, obviously, wasn't in the 32,000 front row seats. It was well and truly up with the gods. But what an atmosphere. It really was cool. Just to sort of see the ring walks and how they haven't just gone, right, there's two boxes boxing now. It's all it's a performance, isn't it? The whole ring walking going in, all the fireworks. It was really, really cool.
Oh, man, it looked amazing on telly. I wish I'd been there. But the reason I wanted to bring it up, right, and you sort of hit the nail on the head as you were just talking about it there, is that the 94,000 people in an arena is an incredible thing, right? But we've all had videos with way more people than that watching them. But that's what's happening.
Which is insane.
You're in the middle and that many people are all watching.
Yeah.
But you can't touch them. You can't quite see them, but they're there. But if you stood in the middle of a stadium and put your audience around you, it would be a terrifying thing.
Big time.
It would be like, oh my God, I can't speak.
Yeah.
There's too many people here. I can't take the energy. But that's what you guys, that's why the influencer thing works, is because that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what your biggest viewed video is, but I think regularly you're probably getting tens of thousands of people and close to those numbers all the time. It's an incredible thing, isn't it?
It is mad. I think the hardest thing with something like social media is we just see figures and that's it.
Yeah,
you don't relate those figures to people. Mm. And to see it on that magnitude, as I said, it's you know, you look at everyone's foot, like certainly within our industry, look how many people you're followed by, and you don't think of that as, oh, it's just a number. Well, if you actually, you acquaint that to three Full House Wembleys or whatever, you think, wow, that's actually something insane, but it's you never madness. Think of it like that.
Yeah,
you know?
It's, I mean, madness. It's... We were just in Bentonville quite recently, in Arkansas, not somewhere I didn't know was a mountain biking hotspot. Turns out it is. But we went there and lots of people were like super GMBN fans. Like, it was like hanging out with 1,000 mates you didn't know you had, wasn't it? It was absolutely amazing. And you just forget it's not happening just down the road or whatever. It's all these people are everywhere, because mountain biking's everywhere. And that's like kind of the beauty of it, is that no matter where you go, you're sort of like maybe only 100 yards away from a mate you've never met.
100%.
Just like, hello, mate. Like, I felt like I knew everybody in this town, because everyone's like, hello, Martin. I was like, hello, how's you? And we just, I could have sat down and had a coffee with any one of them. They were all lovely, and we all were on the same, weirdly on the same vibe. It was so strange. Just lastly, touch on your favourite place to ride, because you've been to some amazing places, and because I've brought up Bentonville, which I think is possibly one of my favourite places to ride now, where would you say is your favourite place? Where, like, give us a little rundown of the places you've been to.
I'm going to be really, really cheesy now, where you can ride anywhere, and it's all about the crew you're with. Like, I've had the best times riding my local, where we do like a bit of a beer cruise every summer, and it's like the funniest thing, but obviously there's no technical riding at all, and you have like such a good time. You know, really spoilt being to Whistler, and as you well know, that it's just like, it is a mountain bike mecca, and
it really is. Yeah.
The tracks are insane, the lifestyle is quite cool, but on the flip side of that, you know, the other side of the world in Queenstown in New Zealand, that's the same, where when I first went there in 2013, and you went there, and it was almost better then, because it was under the radar. You go to the actual town, and people are thinking, why on earth are you wearing a full face, you weirdo, like in the middle of town on a mountain bike, not knowing there's loads of mountain biking there.
Yeah.
So that was really good. And then on the flip side of that, Morzine with a load of your friends, you base yourself out of there, and you can just do loads of riding around the Alps. So there's not like one particular place I'm like, oh yeah, that's the go-to.
I'm making you pick one. I mean, I say physically can't make you do anything. So I'm asking really. With energy.
Queenstown. I'd say Queenstown, because you've got the views. You've got, it's such a laid back thing where you could ride one day, and then if your other half's with you, you could go, okay, we'll keep her happy for a day. We go out on their little steamboat or whatever.
Yeah, it's right. Like, it's got a bit of everything. What a nightmare, Jack. We've got another place to go.
What a nightmare. Look.
Oh,
what happened?
Shame.
Deeks told us we must go.
To I mean, have you been to Bentonville yet?
No,
get ready to change your mind.
There we go.
It's weird, but good.
No, we like it.
Blimey. Mate, let's wrap it there, because I don't want to go over the hour. I'm under the hour, aren't I? Yeah. So it's been ace.
Well, thank you very much.
Let's can't wait to see what you're doing next. And let's nail down our date for the wheelbarrow race.
But
on that point, until next time, thanks very much for listening.
Thank you very much, guys.